भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, or canto 11, chapter 15, text 1 through 3. Chapter summary, or the chapter is entitled Lord Krishna's Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections. This chapter describes the 8 primary and 10 minor mystic perfections. They are developed by fixing one's mind in yoga, but they are ultimately obstructions to achieving the spiritual abode of Lord Vishnu. Being questioned by Uddhava, Lord Sri Krishna describes the characteristics of the 8 mystic perfections and the particular kind of meditation by which each is achieved. In conclusion, Krishna states that for one who desires to perform pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, the achievement of these mystic perfections is a waste of time, because they distract one from proper worship. All these perfections are automatically offered to a pure devotee, but he does not accept them. Unless used in the yoga of devotional service, these perfections are valueless. A devotee simply sees that the personality of Godhead is always present everywhere, both externally and internally, and depends completely upon him. Is that a radio playing, or is that somebody talking? Oh, okay. So text number 1 we'll do together. We'll do responsibly. The word meanings, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Jitta Indriyasya, of one who has conquered his senses, Yuktasya, who has steadied the mind, Jitta Shvasasya, and conquered his breathing system. Yogina, of such a yogi, Mayi in me, Dharayataha, fixing, Cheta, his consciousness, Upatishtanti, appear, Siddhaya, the mystic perfections of yoga. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Jitendriyasya yuktasya Jita shvasasya yoginah Mayi dharayatas cheta Upatishtanti siddhaya Sri Bhagavan uvacha Jitasya Jitendriyasya yuktasya Jitashvasasya yoginah Mayi dharayatas cheta Upatishtanti siddhaya Sri Bhagavan uvacha Jitendriyasya yuktasya Jita shvasasya yoginah Mayi dharayatas cheta Upatishtanti siddhaya Jitendriyasya yuktasya Jitashvasasya yoginah Mayi dharayatas cheta Upatishtanti siddhaya
Sri Shri Bhagavan Vacha,
Indriyasya Yuktasya,
Sasya
Yogina,
Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me." Purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. There are eight primary mystic perfections, such as anima siddhi, and 10 secondary perfections. In this 15th chapter, Lord Krishna will explain that such mystic perfections are actually impediments to the development of Krishna consciousness, and that therefore one should not desire them. Text 2, we can do it together. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Kaya Dharanayaka Svet Katamba Siddhirachuta Katiba Siddhayo Bruhi Yoginam Siddhido Bhavan. Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord Achyuta, by what process can mystic perfection be achieved? And what is the nature of such perfection? How many mystic perfections are there? Please explain these things to me. Indeed, you are the bestower of all mystic perfections." Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Siddhayushtadusha Prukta Dharana Yoga Parare Tasam Ashtau Makradhana Dasheva Gunahitava. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "The masters of the yoga system have declared that there are 18 types of mystic perfection and meditation, of which 8 are primary, having their shelter in me, and 10 are secondary, appearing from the material mode of goodness." Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the word matpradhana as follows. Lord Krishna is naturally the shelter of the 8 primary mystic potencies and meditations, because such perfections emanate from the Lord's personal potency, Swarup Shakti. And thus they are fully developed only within the Lord himself and the Lord's personal associates. When materialistic persons mechanically acquire such potencies, the perfections awarded are of an inferior degree and are considered to be manifestations of Maya, illusion. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically receives from the Lord wonderful potencies to execute his devotional service. If for sense gratification one mechanically endeavors to acquire mystic perfections, then these perfections are certainly considered to be inferior expansions of the Lord's external potency. Om jnanatimirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuram militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We've been hearing about the mystic perfections for a long time. Srila Prabhupada discusses them somewhat in the nectar of devotion, because Rupa Goswami touches on them in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So here we're going to focus on them, learn a little bit more specifically about them. This, of course, the main point is the one that's made here in this summary, that devotees aren't interested in these things. It says that they don't even accept them. Then it says they have no value unless the devotees accept them. So there's also this sentence here which seemed a little ambiguous to me. It says, a pure devotee of the Lord automatically receives from the Lord wonderful potencies to execute his devotional service. So apparently this sentence doesn't refer necessarily or specifically to the mystic perfections. So as pointed out in this third verse today, there are two categories. The first are part of Krishna's Srup Shakti. So they're real. They're part of Krishna. Whatever is part of Krishna's Srup Shakti is part of Krishna, part of Krishna's identity. So in that sense, they have some real substance. And then the other 10, they're considered to be products of Maya. Here it says the material mode of goodness. The Sanskrit is guna hetave. It just says guna. Somehow it's taken as the mode of goodness specifically. This must be from one of the acharyas. So the mode of goodness, of course, you have to do meditation. Now the verses that are coming, the next verse lists all 8 of them and gives an explanation of what they all are. And as I was preparing this class, I kept wanting to go over there and grab these and steal tomorrow's class from the devotees. No, the devotee tomorrow can explain what each one of these are, because that's what comes up in the purport. So I'm stuck here speaking in a general way about these mystic potencies. I was thinking of the different times that Prabhupada spoke about them. Actually, the first thing I was thinking about was, how does this relate to devotees? Devotees, they seem to show mystic power. Or where does mystic power come up in our books? Where do we hear about mystic power? The cities. Of course, Prabhupada, he would often just start the list, anima, lagima, mahima, prapti. He would usually just recite these 4. And then he would give the rest of the list, especially these 8. He never spoke about the other ones, although sometimes he talked about things that people did, which would indicate that they were from the other 10 and not necessarily from these primary 8. So Prabhupada would talk about these, and he would say that these are just a waste of time. Devotees have no interest in these things. People would ask him about them, and he would say, why are you interested in this? And of course, some of the particular mystic city, for example, being able to produce gold, people are attracted to this. And Prabhupada, of course, he didn't like that at all. Why are people attracted? They think this is God. There's one lecture I was looking at. Chaitanya Charitamrita lecture Prabhupada gave in 1976 in New York. And actually, it's an interesting lecture because the whole lecture pretty much, Prabhupada starts talking about miracles, actually, because he sometimes uses these together, miracles he would talk about, and mystic power. So he was talking about how they produce gold and they think this is the guru. They worship as the guru just because he can produce gold and gets many, many followers. And Prabhupada said the Vaishnava acharyas, they're not interested in cheap tricks like this to attack followers. So in this lecture, Prabhupada says the real mystic power, the real miracle of the devotee, and then he started quoting the Sri Guru Charana Padma song. And he ended up going through the whole thing, phrase by phrase. He asked one of the devotees, what's the next line? What's the next line? What's the next line? So there Prabhupada said that the mystic power is give Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sama Bandomoi Savadhana Mate Jahara Prasade Bhai Bhavatoriya Jai Krishna Prapti Jaha Krishna Prapti. So Prabhupada said, this is actually the interesting, isn't it? Sing it every day and you can't remember. Prabhupada said, this is actually the miracle of the mystic power of the spiritual master. That he can destroy material existence and he can give you Krishna. So the bogey yogi, he can give you gold, but the real guru, he can give you Krishna. What kind of a miracle is that? He can give you Krishna. Of course, we know one of the cities is Prapti City. It means you take something from one place anywhere and you can bring it to where you are. so that the pure devotee can bring Krishna to you right here. Prabhupada tells a story. When he was a boy, he said he had a tutor, which I thought was interesting. Prabhupada had a tutor. Usually kids have tutors when they're not so good in school. They have to have a little extra time. But anyway, Prabhupada had a tutor, and he said his tutor told him about his guru. And he said his guru, what he was with, he was studying under his guru, and the guru asked him, what do you want to eat? And apparently this was a big thing, that people liked the idea of pomegranates. It was hard to get good pomegranates, so the boy said, I want to get a pomegranate from Kabul, from Afghanistan. Those are the best ones. So the guru said, just go in the other room. So he went into the other room, and there was a fresh-cut branch of a pomegranate tree with juice coming out of the pomegranate. A perfect pomegranate tree was there. So this is Prapti Siddhi. You can just take something from anywhere and bring it to where you are. So when we hear about them, these mystic cities, we hear them often in reference to these yogis, miracle men, and so on, attracting people. Actually, as far as gold, Prabhupada says, the yogis, they can drink mercury. He tells the whole process in one place. Of course, if you drink mercury, it's highly poisonous. So, don't try this, you know, it won't work on you. But the yogis, they have the power, they do this. And the process, of course, these are mystic powers, so the process is then they urinate the next day and then they put some copper coins. Prabhupada said, just like you have your copper coins. So they put that inside the urine the next day and it turns into gold. So we don't do that. So we hear about these things in reference to these different yogis. Actually, Prabhupada also said he saw someone do just like Houdini, exactly the same thing. Houdini tied up in with chains and put into a trunk, and the trunk tied up, and then I think maybe thrown in the water. This whole thing, Houdini did things like this. So Prabhupada said he saw it himself, and he said then the man, this yogi, I guess he was standing in the crowd. A few minutes later, there he was. And then he was gone again, and then they opened up the trunk, and there he was back inside the trunk. So somehow, these things are possible. They seem like miracles, or we don't know how they do them. But they do them, and they get them. They like to get attention, of course. You get a following if you can do these things. Now, we also hear these things in relationship to the demons, generally. Of course, the demons, Prabhupada said, just like Prabhupada said about technology, said technology is in the hands of the demons. They're the ones that like to pursue technology. Technology means manipulating the material energy. You have science and technology. Right? Science is the theory, and you apply the theory, so then you can produce amazing things. Just like today, we have so many amazing things, which practically they seem miraculous, the things we're able to do today. So the technology grows out of that science. So similarly, if one knows the science of mystic powers, one can also do amazing kinds of things. So the demons, they're interested in that. They like to control material nature. That's what they're all about. So it comes up in Krishna's pastimes. Of course, so many demons came. One power they have is to change their appearance. Like Putana, she was an ugly rakshasi, but she appeared as a beautiful woman. And they assume different forms in Krishna's lila. But of course, Krishna just easily dispatched them, took care of them. Because he's Yogeshwara, they can't overcome him. So the demons are interested in this, and they do amazing things. Like this Shalva had that airplane, Saubha, I think the name of the plane, that even had a name. So this plane could do all kinds of amazing things. In the course of that pastime, Krishna's fighting with this demon. There's that one place in the fight where he produces Vasudeva, Krishna's father, and cuts off his head, apparently, right in front of Krishna. But Krishna wasn't impressed. It didn't bother him. He wasn't disturbed by it. You know, this was just magic. Similarly, when the yakshas, I was trying to think of different examples with mystic power. So the yakshas, actually, let me read a little something here about the yakshas. Because we don't read these things often, sometimes we don't really know the details too clearly. At least I don't remember them, even though I listen to these things a lot, actually, translations. But here's a description of this scene. Dhruva Maharaj is fighting with the Yakshas because the Yakshas killed his brother. So he was upset about that. So he went there to fight with them. So at one point, it seemed like they were gone because he was showering arrows on them. And then they all disappeared. He thought, well, maybe I won. But then he thought, well, I don't know about these guys. let's see. Actually, I was thinking of Dhruva Maharaj. He, of course, he also had his own mystic power. He was able to block the whole breathing of the universe. So that's quite an impressive feat. So I'll pick up here this in the story of Dhruva Maharaj fighting the Yakshas. This is Canto 4, Chapter 10, Verse 21. Dhruva Maharaj, the best of human beings, observed that in that great battlefield, not one of the opposing soldiers was left standing with proper weapons. He then desired to see the city of Olakapuri, but he thought to himself, no one knows the plans of the mystic Yakshas. Now, Kuvera, of course, is their head, the leader of the Yakshas. Somewhere I read just recently, in one of Prabhupada's books, that he's actually a Yaksha himself. I didn't realize that he was considered a Yaksha himself, but apparently he is. So in the meantime, while Dhruva Maharaj, doubtful of his mystic enemies, was talking with his charioteer, they heard a tremendous sound, as if the whole ocean were there. And they found that from the sky a great dust storm was coming over them from all directions. Within a moment, the whole sky was overcast with dense clouds, and severe thundering was heard. There was glittering electric lightning and severe rainfall. My dear faultless Vidura, this is Maitreya speaking, my dear faultless Vidura, in that rainfall there was blood. Now just think of this, it's rain. This is the rain that's coming down. There was blood, mucus, pus, stool, urine, and marrow falling heavily before Dhruva Maharaj, and there were trunks of bodies falling from the sky. Who? They talk about raining cats and dogs, but they never... raining dead bodies. Next, a great mountain was visible in the sky, and from all directions hailstones fell, along with lances, clubs, swords, iron bludgeons, and great pieces of stone. Dhruva Maharaj also saw many big serpents with angry eyes vomiting forth fire and coming to devour him, along with groups of mad elephants, lions, and tigers. It's not only coming from the sky, on the earth you have all these creatures coming after you, including what seem to be dragons, snakes breathing fire. Then, as if it were the time of the dissolution of the whole world, it's not over yet, the fierce sea with foaming waves and great roaring sounds came forward before him. The demon Yakshas are by nature very heinous, and by their demoniac power of illusion, they can create many strange phenomena to frighten one who is less intelligent. I think I have to put myself in that category. When the great sages heard that Dhruva Maharaj was overpowered by the illusory mystic tricks of the demons, the sages, they immediately assembled to offer him auspicious encouragement. All the sages said, so what are they going to tell him to do? Dear Dhruva, O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Sharanga Dhanva, that means one who carries the Sharanga bow, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, kill all your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord himself. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus a devotee is saved. I guess that's probably what we would do anyway, wouldn't we? If that happened to us, we'd start chanting like anything, that's for sure. Then it goes on. Now, that's the end of the chapter 10. So, but he doesn't exactly chant, well, as we would think of it. This is the beginning of the next chapter. I'll read the first few verses. So this is what he does. Sri Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj heard the encouraging words of the great sages, he performed achmana by touching water and then took up his bow made by Lord Narayana and his arrow made by Lord Narayana and fixed it upon his bow. As soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayana Astra bow arrow to his bow, the illusion created by the Yakshas was immediately vanquished. Just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self." Now this Narayana Astra is most likely is invoked by chanting the name of Narayana. Just like the Narayana Kavacha shield, it's all about names of Narayana. Now, all names of the Lord. Even as Dhruva Maharaj fixed the weapon made by Narayana Rishi onto his bow, arrows with golden shafts and feathers like the wings of a swan flew out from it. All he had to do was touch it, basically. They entered the enemy soldiers with a great hissing sound, just as peacocks enter a forest with tumultuous crowing. Those sharp arrows dismayed the enemy soldiers, who became almost unconscious. But various yakshas on the battlefield, in a rage against Dhruva Maharaj, somehow or other collected their weapons and attacked. So anyway, it goes on, and we know that Dhruva Maharaj ultimately is victorious. And then Swayambhuva Manu comes on the scene and asks them to stop killing all the yakshas. So this is their mystic power. And Dhruva Maharaj, apparently, it seems like he's doing some kind of mystic power here, but it's connected with Krishna. That's really the point. The devotee's mystic power, it's connected to Krishna. And just like Dhruva, I was thinking about this traveling around. Prabhupada talks about Siddha Loka. That's another thing Prabhupada often said. When he talked about mystic power, he would talk about Siddha Loka. He said, just like you're born here, you have certain powers. We have certain powers. We can speak, we can walk, talk. There's certain things we can do just by being born on earth in a human body. So when you're born on Siddhaloka, automatically you have all these mystic perfections. So one of the things is that you can just go from one planet to another without an airplane. So I was thinking about Narada Muni. I thought, well, he's a devotee. Is he just using mystic power? What is his position exactly? In fact, here's a verse about Narada Muni where Prabhupada talks about this. This is, I didn't write the chapter now. Oh, 4th canto, 29th chapter, text 80. So Narada Muni has just spoken to King Prachina Bharti. Then it says, "The supreme devotee, the great saint Narada, thus explained to King Prachina Bharti the constitutional position of the supreme personality of Godhead and the living entity. After giving an invitation to the king, Narada Muni left to return to Siddhaloka." I don't know what the invitation was. Come to Siddhaloka when you die. Anyway, so the purport. Siddhaloka and Brahma, this is Prabhupada's purport, of course. Siddhaloka and Brahmaloka are both within the same planetary system. So I'm not sure I was aware of that. Brahmaloka is understood to be the highest planet within this universe. Siddhaloka is considered to be one of the satellites of Brahmaloka. So the suburbs of Brahmaloka. The inhabitants of Siddhaloka have all the powers of yogic mysticism. From this verse, it appears that the great sage Narada is an inhabitant of Siddhaloka, although he travels through all the planetary systems. All the residents of Siddhaloka are spacemen, and they can travel in space without mechanical help. The residents of Siddhaloka can go from one planet to another individually by virtue of their yogic perfection. After giving instructions to the great king Prachina Bharti, Narada Muni departed and also invited him to Siddhaloka. All right, that is what happened. So Narada, but then Prabhupada clarifies about Narada's position. He says that Narada, it's not that Narada is just an ordinary yogi using mystic perfections, but Narada's body is completely spiritual. He doesn't have a material body like an ordinary yogi. And he's fully liberated. The yogi is still a conditioned soul, but he's learned how to manipulate the material energy. But Narada Muni is completely liberated in a spiritual body, and Prabhupada says he can go anywhere just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead can. Narada can go to Vaikuntha whenever he wants, and he does sometimes. He goes to Vaikuntha. and then or he goes travels all over the material. We know we read the Bhagavatam. I was thinking somebody could do a whole book. In fact, it'd be a long book of all the appearances of Narada Muni in the Bhagavatam. Practically every pastime, it's there. It's really amazing. He's really everywhere, arranging marriages. That's one of the things he does. He does all kinds of things. So he goes everywhere, but it's his, because he has a spiritual body. He's an eternally liberated soul. So he's able to use this mystic power, we can say, because again, this is Krishna's Swarup Shakti. So he's, in one sense you can say it's a mystic power, in other it's just spiritual, it's part of the constitutional position of the soul to be able to do these things. Now another, I'll just mention one more little example of mystic power and the devotee's involvement with in different pastimes. Of course, we think of Durvasa Muni. Durvasa was he was a yogi, and he had great power. When he became angry at Ambarish Maharaj, what did he do? He pulled a bunch of hair from his head. He's a pretty angry guy, this Durvasa Muni. Ripped out a palm full of hair from his head. I couldn't do that. I guess if I grabbed my Sikha heart enough. And he threw it down and he created this fiery demon. It was like, you know, made of fire, practically. So, what does it say about him? Let me see. I have the verse here. Ambarish Maharaj. First of all, now, we hear about the Sudarshan, of course, the Sudarshan Chakra shows up here. But it comes up earlier in the chapter when Ambarish Maharaj is just being introduced. Because this comes in the context of genealogy. This king's son was so-and-so, and this king's son was so-and-so. So we get to Ambarish Maharaj, and often there's just one a line or a shloka or two that explains who the person was and something about them. So when it says about Ambarish Maharaj, it says he was such a great devotee. Well, this is the verse. This is in 9.4.28. Being very pleased by the unalloyed devotion of Maharaj Ambarish, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the king his disc. So it says here, Adat Hari Chakram. He was given Hari Chakra, which is fearful to enemies and which always protects the devotee from enemies and adversities. So anyway, Prabhupada talks about this some, but then about 20 verses later, we're in the story of Dhruva Maharaj, and it says here, Durvasa Muni, not Dhruva Maharaj. It disconnects sometimes, short circuit in the brain. As Durvasa Muni said this, that means he was angry. He was saying a bunch of angry things to Ambarish Maharaj because he'd broken his fast. His face became red with anger. Uprooting a bunch of hair from his head, he created a demon resembling the blazing fire of devastation to punish Maharaj Ambarish. Taking a trident in his hand and making the surface of the earth tremble with his footsteps, that blazing creature came before Maharaj Ambarish. But the king, upon seeing him, was not at all disturbed and did not move even slightly from his position. When I read that, I say, whoa! After reading about Dhruva Maharaj, it says there he was somewhat disturbed, and then the sages told him what to do. But Maharaj Ambarish, look at this demon. He's like blazing fire of devastation that's coming to attack you, and he doesn't even flinch. I was talking about flinching in my life, unflinching devotional service recently. So what happens? Not obviously, you're good. The instinct for self-protection is going to kick in with something like that. We can't avoid it. When fear arises within you, certain things happen to your body. Well, sometimes you faint, actually. People, when you're faced with a situation like that, you just pass out from the terror of it. But Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't do anything. He just stood there. Why? Because he had faith that Krishna is going to protect me. And of course, Krishna did. I hear it said the next verse. As fire in the forest immediately burns to ashes an angry snake, so by the previous order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately burnt to ashes the created demon to protect the Lord's devotee. So Sudarshan is the fire of all fires. He burnt the fire, this fiery demon created by this Durvasa Muni. So devotees always come out on top. They're always protected. They're protected by Yogeshwar, by the invincible power of Lord Krishna. No matter what the angry yogi or asuras can produce with their mystic power, by Krishna's protection. Now, it's nice that in this verse it said, by the previous order of the Supreme Lord, Sudarshan protected him. So Krishna said, you protect Ambarish Maharaj. So Ambarish Maharaj, that's why he didn't flinch, because he knew, well, Sudarshan's right here. I don't have to worry about it. And he must have always been thinking that, because he didn't respond at all to that fearful situation. So he knew he was in that. Prabhupada often talks about fearlessness. Shoka moha bhayapaha. By pure devotional service, one of the things you get is fearlessness. So quite an amazing thing to be always fearless. So here we see a nice demonstration of that in the face of what would normally be an extremely frightening situation. So I'll stop here. Let me just read the translation to the first verse here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Uddhava, the mystic perfections of yoga are acquired by a yogi who has conquered his senses, steadied his mind, conquered the breathing process, and fixed his mind on me. One thing we'll see in this chapter, all of these different perfections, how you get them, they're all about meditating on Krishna in some particular form. Like if you want to be very tiny, anima siddhi, then you meditate on the Lord who's inside everything. He's smaller than the smallest, so you meditate on the Lord in that form. And if you want to be mahima siddhi, if you want to be great, then you meditate on the universal form, or the Mahapurusha, or the Lord that pervades everything in that way. So they're all connected with meditation on Krishna. When I read this, I think, why are they wasting their time on these things? They're already meditating on Krishna. They have to control their senses. They have to control that. They have to have self-control already, these yogis. So why not just become a devotee instead of... They've already gotten over a big hurdle, because they have self-control, but because their motivation is off, they're not getting real success. All right, Janmashtami Prabhu.
Is the Sarup Shakti, is that synonymous as Antaranga Shakti, or the internal potency?
Yes.
It seems unusual, you know, just based upon how we usually view the internal potency of the Lord, that it's being utilized, you know, by demons.
Yeah.
You know, to enter into the Antaranga Shakti is like a glorious and such a special opportunity. So it just doesn't kind of add up, you know, from a commonsensical standpoint, you know, of how the internal energy can be misused.
Well, we of course, the Ladini Shakti, we're misusing that too. That's the internal potency. But we're getting material happiness. We're trying to get happiness. So anything that related to Krishna can be misused. My understanding of the way this works, you know, we know that the 8 are part of the Srup Shakti, and 10 are directly from the gunas. But when the demons or the mystic yogis with material desires are using the 8, they're also getting a reflection as it is in this material world. They don't have direct contact with the Srup Shakti. They're in contact with the expansion of the Srup Shakti as it exhibited in this material world. That's why it says here, it says, for sense gratification, one mechanically endeavors to acquire mystic perfections. Now here it's just speaking in general about all of them. Then these perfections are certainly considered to be inferior expansions of the Lord's external potency. So that seems to be the case, that even these eight are, they're expanded. They can also, of course, everything that's, that Krishna can manifest in the temporary material energy and the modes of material nature. So even these have their reflections, you could say. But the thing about them is that they do exist eternally as part of Krishna in reality. These 8 primary ones.
So the material world is created as a reformatory facility for the jiva that's turned away from Krishna. So I guess this is just part of that, this mystic powers.
Yeah, it's part of it, because you get to part of the Of course, we're always being tested by Maya, so this is part of the test. You're given so much power. You can, in the Nectar Devotion, he says you can create a planet. We'll hear about this later. Some of these, you can basically, it's several of them, they sound very similar, because you can pretty much do anything you want. So one of the things you can do is create a whole planet. Or an example Prabhupada gave of mystic power was also Vishvamitra Muni. He said he created a tree that grew human beings. So they didn't have to take birth and from a womb, they just come off a tree. I think I'll go for that one in my next life. Sounds a little better. Let's go on the lady side here. Madhumatipuru.
One comment and a question. Comment, I remember reading in one of purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Prabhupada talks about the scientist may be able to, I know he said, reach or contact the Vaikuntha planets. Do you remember reading that? Or Pangala Prabhu? It's in the, I think it's in Adi Leela or something. Mm-hmm. He said, I was kind of shocked, but he definitely said something that they would be, in future the scientists may be able to contact or reach the Vaikuntha planets.
It sounds like he may be using Durvasa Muni as a as evidence of this. Mm-hmm. Of course, as far as I understand, Durvasa didn't go out of this world. He went to on this Vaikuntha in this.
Yeah, so probably that's what it was.
So maybe that's the same idea.
Yeah. A question is, on one hand, like you're saying, it's natural that we have fear. You know, things happen, we are fearful. A natural response would be when there is some imminent death or, you know, the whole description you were talking about and Ambarish, how he didn't flinch. But, you know, somebody like us, it's a natural thing. And yet at the same time, we understand that fear is opposite of faith, yeah? I mean, we are fearful, that means we don't have faith. And yet at the same time, it's a natural thing. I guess I'm trying to think, how do we, can we actually get rid of this fear that is there?
I mean, it says it in many places that with pure devotional service you overcome. You get abhaya. As you're saying this, I'm thinking there's a sign in Rayford, maybe you've seen it, now outside the church. It says, fear means that you have more faith in God's enemies than in God. That you think they're going to hurt you, that thing is going to hurt you. God can't protect you. But it is spontaneously because we're still conditioned souls. Now, there is a stage where you transcend all of that. Apparently, Ambarish Maharaj is at that stage. Or like Prahlad Maharaj also, of course, he's a wonderful example. This whole story of Prahlad Maharaj and Nrisimhadeva, that whole pastime, covers quite a few chapters in the seventh canto. And early we hear about Prahlad Maharaj's character, and it's quite amazing. He was really like an avaduta, practically. He was out of this world. He would be talking with Krishna and laughing, and that's just out loud, spontaneously. He would be laughing because internally he was playing with Krishna or associating with Krishna. So he was completely, or at least if he wanted to, he could withdraw his consciousness from everything external and exist completely on that plane of transcendence. So when one comes to that stage, that's possible. But generally, just like Gajendra kind of, he basically apologizes that, you know, I shouldn't ask God for anything, but I'm scared, so I'm asking God to help me. The Prabhupada also says that that's natural. That devotees are, they're in a fearful situation that they call out to the Lord for help. So we know there are many, many stages, many levels of Krishna consciousness where we're considered devotees, but we may not be on that level where we don't react even spontaneously to danger, fearful situations.
I mean, one of Rupa Goswami's Anya Bhilashita Sunyam, and specifically Jiva Goswami mentions, it says Anya Bhilashita, meaning that suffix ta refers to the natural calling out when there is a situation, you know, that a devotee may call out. But yet, I guess, and that is...
But that's still considered Uttama Bhakti.
And exactly, that is still considered Uttama Bhakti, you know.
Nice. Yes.
In 1974, in April, Srila Prabhupada opened a branch of the Punjab National Bank at Krishna Balaram Mandir, and he quoted this story of Dhruva killing the yakshas, and it was remarkable because he compared the bank manager, he called him the local Kuvera. So he was telling the story, and Prabhupada said, so of course, Dhruva was killing the yakshas to avenge the death of his brother by one yaksha. So Prabhupada said he was killing the yakshas like anything, Prabhupada said, like anything. And finally, Lord Brahma came and said, Dhruva, why are you doing this? Only one yaksha killed your brother. Why? It's not proper. You know, you must desist. You can't kill so many. And so he did stop, and Kuvera was so grateful that he came forward and offered Dhruva anything he wanted, any desire. And when the treasurer of the demigods offered, I mean, she could have planets, he could have all the wealth in the world, he could have anything. And of course, by that time, Dhruva had come to his senses, and he was a pure devotee of the Lord, so he said, yes, I ask you to please pray that I may always remain at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada said, and I also would like to make this same request of the local Kuvera, the bank manager, to please keep me engaged in the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna.
Yeah.
You
know?
I have one question, and I want to understand another point. In Russia, when Prabhupada went first time, so when the KGB opened the suitcase, and Prabhupada did not know the Bhagavad Gita, the Mother Maluti put it out of her compassion way of thinking, but Prabhupada told no book should be there. But some or other, she didn't hear that. She thought, oh, they're going first time, I must give it, at least Bhagavad Gita. It was the first thing on the suitcase. So when KGB opened it, and he took the book, but the suitcase fell off. So the man felt so embarrassed, he didn't even look at the, and he immediately packed it. He said, oh, I'm sorry, okay, go. So Prabhupada, later on, he speak about it, and he says, I was so afraid that these people are dangerous, they can put me in dungeon. So then I was thinking for so many months, like, why Prabhupada was afraid like that? I still didn't comprehend completely. Was it just an expression he was saying, or actually was he experiencing something could happen to him? What is your view?
I don't know. Prabhupada acted like us. He acted like an ordinary person. All I can say. One of the things we learn is that he's showing that I'm one of you. I'm just like you are. And this is how we react in situations like this. We pray to Krishna. We're afraid and we pray to Krishna. What Prabhupada is experiencing on other levels, that's beyond my comprehension. So I take that as a lesson, Prabhupada. Because, sometimes devotees, they want to paint Prabhupada as Shakti Avishavatar, completely above everything. You can take that and you might get a little cynical and think, well, then Prabhupada didn't make any sacrifices. Oh, he got sick on the Jaladutta, so what? He's completely transcendental. He didn't really get sick. But actually, this kind of came up recently in a class, and Radha Gopinath Prabhu told me, he said that one time they were having a conversation with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said, don't think that Prabhupada didn't suffer. Prabhupada suffered. So that's at least for our perception, as his, we should see that way, that he suffered so much for us, for our benefit, and in this situation, he's showing a normal person. Now, it could also be, we can also use the word afraid figuratively. I don't know if Prabhupada was really afraid. He said, concerned, maybe the word was concerned that something might happen, might impede my preaching here in Russia. So what exactly he meant by that, I don't know. But even if he did show it, he's showing how to react to it. He's teaching us by the things that he did. He acted like one of us, not like somebody who has mystic powers and walks on water and does all kinds of things. Completely transcendental. Just like he went through with the, fighting for Bombay. Prabhupada was certainly concerned, and he showed, you can say anxiety about the situation and so on. But he showed how all this is used for Krishna. Connect it all to Krishna, then it becomes perfect.
That's nice, the way you said. I think because the rest, one line I also remember, he says, I was praying and Krishna protected. Mm-hmm. So somehow the suitcase fell. He thought it was Krishna's protection by falling the suitcase or something, that this man. Now I have another question on this Siddhaloka. Now there's I always thought there's two places called Siddhaloka, and I'm still not, because in Bhagavatam purport, also in Brihad Bhagavatam Mita, the Gop Kumar's travel, Arjuna is also going with Krishna to the to rescue the 10th child of the Brahmanas. All this calculation in the Brihad Bhagavatam Mita, it says that in beyond the Viraja, then there is a Brahmaloka. So you read the Brahmaloka, but you said Brahmaloka is the highest of the material.
Yeah, that's that. Brahmaloka.
So then I'm confused.
Planet of Brahma.
Maybe it's the same name, but there it says beyond the Viraja, and in Brahmaloka there is two tires. One is Kailas Dham, Lord Shiva's, and below is the Siddhaloka, where all the demons get killed. They enter there, impersonalist goes there, sometime traveling preacher like Narada pass by. But then many times Prabhupada also says Siddhaloka is like above, between heaven, near somewhere there.
I think it's a similar situation where the words sound the same. They are the same. Brahmaloka, where Brahma lives, Lord Brahma lives. And then Brahmaloka, which is the loka Brahma, which means the spiritual world, Brahma Jyoti, they have the same name. So similarly, Siddhaloka, there's a Siddhaloka with the Siddhas who are still on the demigod, you might say, platform. There's a planet for them where they have all these mystic powers or yogis. But then the Siddhas who are yogis who are transcendental, they're outside this material world. That's also called Siddhaloka. Now, actually, as you were saying this, I was thinking there's that region that Arjuna and Krishna went through beyond Loka Loka Mountain. That may also be called Siddhaloka, actually.
Yes.
So, then the same words are used for different situations, different places. That's the same, just like there are many Pittsburghs in America. So, one in Pennsylvania, and there's another one, some other state,
Where is this reference you get, 429 AD or something?
Yeah. Okay. That's a Dhruva. All right, we done? Am I off the hook? No. Chimasami Prabhu. You have 30 seconds. Oh, you forgot, so we're good. Okay. It's nice when you have an old audience that forget their question. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.